Hello and welcome to AZANANO News for the week commencing the 26th of May 2008, brought to you by AZANANO.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of AZANANO News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear about new nano barcodes that can help to detect disease, a new nano composite polymer supermaterial, and how carbon nanotubes are being used to build superior displays. In this week's AZANANO interview, Cameron Chai speaks with Mark Roberts from Davies Collison & Cave, patent and trademark attorneys, about managing intellectual property. These stories and more in this edition of AZANANO News. A new technology with research and clinical application, including the early detection of disease, has been invented and developed by the University of Queensland. UQ's Australian Institute for Bioengineering and Nanotechnology has developed fluorescent barcodes called nanostrings, offering greater sensitivity and accuracy than current detection methods. Nanostrings are used to bind to RNA molecules for digital gene expression analysis. Because this system can count the exact number of biomolecules present, it's possible to get an extremely accurate and sensitive picture of gene expression at a particular point in time. The technology is based on a non-enzymatic process, which reduces the chance of bias and is more robust in a variety of different conditions. The researchers are currently working on the next step, which will be new nanobarcodes that will further reduce the cost and improve sensitivity and usability. For the first time, researchers at Delft University of Technology have witnessed the spontaneous repair of damaged DNA molecules in real time. They observed this at the level of a single DNA molecule. Insight into this type of repair mechanism is essential, as errors in the process can lead to the development of cancerous cells. One major DNA repair mechanism involved in repairing these breaks is known as homologous recombination. To observe this, a DNA molecule is stretched between a magnetic bead and a glass surface. A force is exerted on the magnetic bead using a magnetic field, enabling researchers to pull and rotate a single DNA molecule in a controlled fashion. As the position of the bead changes when the DNA molecule is repaired, researchers are able to observe the repair process in detail. The U.S. Army Research Laboratory and the College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering of the University at Albany signed an agreement today to create a new research partnership that is designed to accelerate the development and commercialization of nanotechnology-enabled sensors and electronic devices that will play a critical role in the U.S. Army's transition into a 21st century fighting force. Through the partnership, scientists from ARL and CNSE will conduct joint research targeting development of a variety of next-generation devices, structures and systems enabled by nanotechnology. These technologies include sensor-on-a-chip systems for anti-terrorism and soldier-in-the-field remote sensing. Lighter but stronger nanomaterial coatings that offer protection against chemical, thermal and environmental conditions, and sensor networks and power electronic devices that provide multifunctionality while operating at low power. Unidime Incorporated, a majority-owned subsidiary of Arrowhead Research Corporation, announced today the world's first full-color active matrix LCD made with carbon nanotube components. The new active matrix LCD was made in collaboration with Silicon Display Technology, based in Seoul, Korea. Unidime's engineers and scientists worked closely with Silicon Display Technology to produce this fully functional active matrix LCD, incorporating carbon nanotube-based transparent electrodes on the color filter. Conventional fab equipment was used to build the display, demonstrating that there's a direct path towards integrating nanotube technology into today's high-volume manufacturing processes for liquid crystal displays. Coupled with the cost savings that a nanotube process can bring to the table, strong interest is expected in this technology. Samsung Electronics has demonstrated the world's first carbon nanotube-based active matrix electrophoretic display, or EPD, e-paper. The new e-paper device is the result of an ongoing joint development program between Samsung Electronics Co. Ltd. and Unidyne. The e-paper device uses a carbon nanotube transparent electrode developed by Unidyne. Engineers and scientists at Unidyne and Samsung worked closely together over the past year to produce the first active matrix e-paper device incorporating carbon nanotube transparent electrodes. Electrophoretic displays offer inherent advantages over traditional flat panel displays due to their low power consumption and bright light readability, making them well suited for handheld and mobile applications. Since they can be produced on thin, flexible substrates, EPDs are also ideally suited for use in e-paper applications. Unlike conventional flat panel displays, electrophoretic displays rely on reflected light and can retain text or images without constant refreshing, thereby dramatically reducing power consumption. A major study published today in Nature Nanotechnology suggests some forms of carbon nanotubes could be as harmful as asbestos if inhaled in sufficient quantities. The study used established methods to see if specific types of nanotubes have the potential to cause mesothelioma, a cancer of the lung lining that can take 30 to 40 years to appear following exposure. The results show long, thin, multi-walled carbon nanotubes that look and behave like asbestos fibres. According to the report, while there are reasons to suppose that nanotubes can be used safely, this will depend on appropriate steps being taken to prevent them from being inhaled in the places they're manufactured, used, and ultimately disposed of. The authors say that such steps should be based on research into exposure and risk prevention, leading to regulation of their use. NASA has developed a revolutionary nanotechnology-based biosensor that can detect trace amounts of specific bacteria, viruses, and parasites. This biosensor will be used to help prevent the spread of potentially deadly biohazards in water, food, and other contaminated sources. NASA's Ames Research Center at Moffett Field in California licensed the biosensor technology to Early Warning Incorporated. Under a reimbursable Space Act agreement, NASA and Early Warning jointly will develop biosensor enhancements. Initially, the biosensor will be configured to detect the presence of common and rare strains of microorganisms associated with waterborne illnesses and fatalities. The biosensor makes use of ultra-sensitive carbon nanotubes, which can detect biohazards at very low levels. When biohazards are present, the biosensor generates an electrical signal, which is used to determine the presence and concentration levels of specific microorganisms in the sample. Because of their tiny size, millions of nanotubes can fit onto a single biosensor chip. Advance Nanotech Incorporated announced today that its Alstone Nanotech Incorporated subsidiary, which in October 2007 was awarded a three-year $3.7 million contract by the United States Defense Threat Reduction Agency, has received a modification accelerating its delivery of chemical sensor products. The Department of Defense contract requires Alstone to develop, design, and fabricate a miniaturized chemical detector using a field asymmetric ion mobility spectrometer, or FAMES, capable of detecting chemicals below or immediately dangerous to life or health concentration levels. Initially, Alstone will proceed with a live agent test program of the FAMES sensor technology for in-field applications. The focus of the program will be the microsystems development and integration to yield a sensor with a low ancillary systems footprint. The final stage of this contract will be to deliver sensitive, low false positive, explosive detection capabilities with optimized sensor packaging for field deployable scenarios. Researchers at Northwestern University and Princeton University have created a new kind of polymer that, because of its extraordinary thermal and mechanical properties, could be used in everything from airplanes to solar cells. The polymer, a nanocomposite that incorporates functionalized exfoliated graphene sheets, even conducts electricity, and researchers hope to use that property to eventually create thermally stable, optically transparent conducting polymers. Previous use of graphite in polymers did not garner significantly improved properties, since researchers could never get the graphite exfoliated. That meant the graphite was rigid with a low surface area and could only minimally impact properties of the polymer. But when researchers put even a small amount of the newly exfoliated graphene sheets, enough to equal only 0.05% of the material, into the polymer, they found the graphene changed the polymer's thermal stability temperature by 30 degrees. Even adding graphene sheets equal to 0.01% of the material increased stiffness by 33%, far beyond what researchers had predicted. In this week's AzoNano interview, Cameron Chai has an informative chat with Mark Roberts from Davies, Collison, Cave, patent and trademark attorneys, in which they explore the reasons for patenting intellectual property, and we learn how the evolution of nanotech differs from the biotech boom.
This is Cameron Chai here from AzoNano.com, and I've got with me today Mark Roberts, who's a partner at Davies, Collison, Cave, who are patent and trademark attorneys. How are you doing today, Mark?
Very well, Cameron. Good to be here.
So tell me, what do Davies, Collison, Cave specialise in, or your part of the company especially?
Yeah, so Davies, Collison, Cave is a firm of intellectual property specialists, and we have patent attorneys, trademarks attorneys, and lawyers who specialise in providing intellectual property advice. So we cover the full gamut, from assisting people to secure intellectual property rights and then helping them to enforce their rights and giving them assistance in relation to commercialisation and commercial transactions relating to IP.
Okay, and so your activities obviously cover nanotechnology, well, technology in general really, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. I head up the nanotechnology practice group within our firm, but my background is in organic chemistry and pharmacology, sort of quirky little area of pharmacology called molecular radiation biology. So I think that sort of assists me to act in the nanotechnology space, because that technology background included some physics, chemistry, molecular biology. And as we know, nanotechnology is a multidisciplinary field, so it's useful to have background in a few different areas.
And so within your organisation or your team, I guess you've got people with all lots of different backgrounds to deal with the fact that nanotechnology is such a vast field?
Absolutely, yeah. No, we've got a pretty high-level team. We've got technology backgrounds across the gamut of areas that relate to nanotech. So people with polymer chemistry backgrounds, physics backgrounds, IT, chemistry, biology, so all coming together. And what we try and do is put together a team, recognising that mostly nanotechnology involves interdisciplinary collaborations between inventors. So we try and match up a team of attorneys who can handle the technology.
So you've got the expertise to handle more or less anything that anybody's got then?
Yeah, well, look, we certainly do our best. We haven't been troubled yet, so there's a lot of diverse stuff out there that we've had.
Well, see how you go in the future with some of the stuff that people are coming up with.
Yeah.
From your experience and what you guys have dealt with, what sort of trends have you seen going on with IP patenting?
In the nanotechnology space in particular? Yeah, look, I think nanotechnology is interesting because it is a very heavily patented area. I think there have been some analogies drawn between nanotechnology and the biotech boom. But perhaps one significant difference is that when the biotech boom started, there weren't so many universities and research institutes involved in securing patent rights. Whereas what we're seeing now is that a lot of those universities and research institutes are very active in the patenting process. So that means that there's a bit more diversity in the people who are owning patents in the nanotechnology space. It's not just the big corporates, but it also is those institutional players. But some people have had some concerns that because of the spread of people owning patent rights in nanotechnology, and because of perhaps the breadth of some of those early patents, that it might lead to sort of blockages and difficulties in people being able to negotiate the maze of patents and secure, you know, successful commercialisation of their products. And so we refer to that as the patent thickets. And I think it's a bit over-magnified, that problem. I think that especially if people who are active in nanotechnology are able to secure their own patent rights, that will give them a useful tool to be able to negotiate their way through this, I guess, maze of intellectual property rights around it.
And just for anybody out there who might not be aware, why would you patent your intellectual property or your invention, for instance? What's the benefit of doing that?
Yeah, well, look, it's a really fundamental part of the whole process, I think, especially in nanotechnology, where the setup costs and the development costs in relation to any new product are extremely high. The whole idea of the patent system is that there's an exchange between the government and an inventor, so that in return for the inventor providing all the information about the invention and how it works, the government offers a monopoly period. So the idea is that the patent system brings information about inventions out into the public domain for all people to access, but it does so on the basis that the inventor then gets, you know, a period of monopoly protection where it's, you know, effectively protected from competitors.
In Australia, how long is that period?
20 years, yeah, 20 years in pretty well all countries these days. In the case of pharmaceuticals, it can be extended a little bit further, up to 25, but 20 years is a standard term.
And if somebody in Australia, for instance, had a great invention they wanted to patent, they could patent it in Australia, but if they wanted to patent it overseas, there's different processes. You can help people, advise them on that type of thing?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a network of international treaties and conventions that govern the securing of intellectual property rights internationally. So what you can do is file an initial application in Australia, and then within 12 months you can file either individual applications in overseas countries or what's called an international patent application. And those individual overseas applications or international applications will be backdated to the original lodgement date in Australia. So all the different countries associated with IP are involved in these treaties that enable them to work together.
Okay, what sort of things have you been involved with patenting recently? Anything interesting that you could tell us about? Just examples, perhaps?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of interesting things that come across our desk. I guess that's one of the beauties of being a patent attorney, is we get to see some weird, wonderful things. But just in the nanotechnology space, I guess we've been involved with some miniature fabrication inventions, some things relating to diagnostics, using microfluidics. We've also been involved with functionalisation of foods on a nanoscale, which is an interesting and perhaps a slightly unusual one. And there's also been a fair bit of work we've been involved with functionalising polymer and other surfaces, particularly to allow binding to biological agents, and they could be very useful in diagnostics as well as in things like prosthetic joints and other organs might need to be protected from, say, immune attack and the like. So yeah, a range of different things, it keeps it challenging.
And have you noticed anything, could you contrast what's going on with nanotechnology with other technologies at all?
Yeah, look, as I said before, I think the interesting thing in nanotech is that there's more patenting activity, I think, than there was at the outset in some other technologies. Certainly, there's very heavy activity in nanotechnology patenting at the moment. I think the overall rate of increase of patent applications across the technologies is about 12% per year, and in nanotechnology at the moment it's about 25% per year. So it's really increasing dramatically. But whereas in other technologies, at the level of university and research institute, ownership of patents is about 1%. In the case of nanotechnologies, it's up around the 6 or 7% mark. So universities and research institutes seem to have a lot more control in this space than in other areas. And there's some concerns about, you know, the ability of universities to successfully commercialise intellectual property. And so some people have concerns that they might be, obstructive in nanotechnology space, but we haven't really seen that as yet.
So have you been dealing with any of the universities with their IP patenting issues?
Yes, indeed. Our firm handles intellectual property matters for a number of the universities, both in Melbourne, you know, New South Wales and Queensland in particular.
All right then, Mark, thanks for that insight on IP patenting in the nanotechnology arena. And then if anybody's got any more questions, they can certainly contact you directly, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yeah. No, very, very good pleasure to speak to you. Thanks very much for your time.
Azo Nano Business News. On the 29th of April 2008, the Japanese government announced that a decoration was to be bestowed upon Sir Martin Wood OBE FRS, founder and honorary president of Oxford Instruments PLC, in recognition of his outstanding contribution to the promotion of scientific exchange between Japan and the UK. The Order of the Rising Sun, Gold Rays with Neck Ribbon, will be presented to him by the Japanese ambassador on behalf of His Majesty, the Emperor of Japan, in June. Sir Martin established Oxford Instruments in 1959, following his invention of the world's first superconducting magnet. Oxford Instruments was the first commercial company to be spun out from the University of Oxford and one of the most successful. Its operations now span the globe. Advanced Nanotech Incorporated announced today that its Owl Stone Nanotech Incorporated subsidiary has been selected as one of the four finalists for the 2008 Royal Academy of Engineering MacRobert Award, the UK's premier award for innovation in engineering. His Royal Highness, the Duke of Edinburgh, will present a £50,000 sterling prize and the Gold Award medal to the winner of this year's competition at the Academy Award dinner in London on June the 9th, 2008. The MacRobert Award recognises the successful development of innovative ideas in engineering. Catalyx Nanotech Incorporated has begun manufacturing platelet graphite nanofibers at a fraction of a competitor's costs on a small commercial scale, with current production capacity at 250 to 500 kilograms per year. Its production facility in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada, is currently producing 300 kilograms per year of each nanomaterial. Due to demand, Catalyx Nano is constructing a 35-ton-per-year capacity nanomaterials plant in Anaheim, California, which is scheduled for completion in late 2008. The company also plans to produce nanopowders of polymers, ceramics, and precious and transition metal catalysts in powder and alcohol aqueous suspensions. Nanodynamics Energy Incorporated, a subsidiary of Nanodynamics Incorporated, has announced the hire of John Roberto as president. Roberto will be responsible for commercializing efforts in relation to the company's Revolution series of microtubular solid oxide fuel cells, which offer advantages including fuel flexibility and integrated hydrocarbon reforming. Industrial Nanotech Incorporated, an emerging global leader in nanotechnology, announced today that a technical executive from Petrobras will be travelling to the US this summer and spending several days with Mr. Burchill, CEO of Industrial Nanotech Incorporated, and his team of scientists at one of the company's laboratories to outline project specifications for Nanchelate EPX, the company's newest patented energy-efficient product, on several major Petrobras projects. These are in addition to the previously announced 250-kilometre pipeline project the company is involved in, which is scheduled to begin in Q3 2008. Well, that was Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 26th of May 2008. If you have any courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To read expanded versions of the stories you've heard about in this podcast or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.